From the Windows, Doors, and More Studios, your one-stop shop for all your kitchen and bath needs. The Pat Miller Program. WoWo, 92.3 FM and 1190 AM. Depend on it.
Hey, welcome back. We're in our third hour here on this Saturday. Thank you very much for being with us. On the line, I always like to get him when I can. We've missed him for a couple of weeks because of everything going on in Capitol Hill and with his campaign schedule, but he's made a way to be with us today, and I genuinely appreciate it. We've got our 3rd District Congressman, now running for the Senate, Jim Banks. Congressman Banks, good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey, Pat. Good to be with you.
Nice to have you with us. Amanda and the girls are good?
They're hanging in there, you know, at 14, 12, and 10 years old. There's a lot of drama with the Banks girls and the Banks house, but we hang in there. We're proud to serve, and lot going on at home, but also a lot going on in the campaign trail. We're excited about this upcoming November election.
Well, the drama that we had with just two is what brought us to a rapid halt, and we decided never to do three, so you have to take that for what it's worth. How are you feeling on the campaign trail? Things feeling good out there? I mean, I know that the main person that was your main opposition kind of messed himself up, and we don't need to go into all that, but he is not on the ballot, not going to be on the ballot. And so basically, once you get beyond the primary, you're home free.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm overwhelmed by it. I'm not taking it for granted. I just finished a two-week campaign trip around the state. I did Lincoln Day dinners in counties in every corner of the state over 2 weeks period of time, the week before Easter and then this last week as well. And I think everywhere I go, there are big crowds. Republicans are fired up. We want to do what we have to do to save our country. There are big congressional races all over the state, not just in Northeast Indiana, but you have the 8th District's Evansville to Terre Haute. There's a big congressional race there. There's a big congressional race, Victoria Spartz, her race just north of Indianapolis.
Right.
You got the Greg Pence district that he's retiring from, which is the south side of Indianapolis up on the Columbus and the,
right,
the eastern part of the state. So there are big Republican primaries all over the state. And then you got the governor's race, which is, you know, you can't turn on TV without seeing the ads of these candidates. But there's a lot of interest around the state. And I just find everywhere I go, I don't think Hoosiers are that different from New Albany to Fort Wayne, from Munster to Evansville and everything in between. Pat, Hoosiers just want leaders to go to Washington and fight for our country and fight back against the radical left, put America first, stop all of this ridiculous spending on Ukraine and the rest of the world when we have a wide open border and big issues at home. That's what I hear everywhere that I go.
Right. Right.
So that's pretty consistent.
Right. Well, and the president, I did some quotes earlier in the program today from the president and his people, and it's like they're all over the map. You know, there is no border problem. We're secured. And then we've got to fix the border. So what is it? Do we have a problem and it needs to be fixed? Is it not a problem? Don't worry about it. We're in control. I mean, these people are all over the map.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that. I don't know that Joe Biden knows the difference. You know, we had Don Trump Jr. with me last week, and he said if Joe Biden showed up as your Uber driver, you would open the door and look in and see him, and then you would say, "You know what? I'm going to walk."
Yeah.
Close the car door. And I thought that was so true. I mean, what a buffoon that we have in the White House and all of the people around him. I mean, they're so out of touch with normal, everyday working Americans on whether it's the border crisis, which is completely intentional, or his weakness that has turned the world upside down and made it so much more unsafe and dangerous. And we got to get this guy out of the White House, get Donald Trump back there to fix Joe Biden's mess and get our country back on track, or we're going to lose our great country.
I think a lot of Republicans, and you're seeing them all over the state, in fact, with some of the campaigning you do for some others, you actually see them all over the country, where a return to a Trump administration is not just a good idea, but it's the best idea laid before us. You don't back away from that position, do you?
No, not at all. I mean, President Trump was a great president. I think he's going to be an even better president when he gets back into the White House, because he learned a lot of the tough lessons last time. He's not going to repeat. And you have better Republican, stronger Republican leadership that will be backing him up. That's why I'm running for the Senate. He needs backup in the Senate to support his agenda. And he knows that I'm going to be there to help him do that. So, yeah, I find that all over the country. I mean, that people ask me, you know, with so much going on, the open border, inflation, crime, fentanyl, drugs, I mean, how can you be optimistic about our country and our future? And I tell them I'm optimistic because I saw what Donald Trump did before, and I know he can do it again.
Right.
And, you know, I know it's going to be a big job for us when we get back in January, when we get a majority in the Senate, grow the majority in the House. By the way, both times that Trump was on the ballot, 2016 to 2020, he brought voters out that helped us grow the number of Republican seats
right
in the House. So I think we're going to grow the majority in the House. We're going to win the Senate majority. I think that's almost, at this point, almost a given. We can't take it for granted, but we're playing offense in a lot of states where we can beat Democrats and win Senate seats. And then all the polling shows that, you know, Trump leading in Michigan, leading in Pennsylvania, leading in Arizona, Georgia, states that he won in 16 but lost in 2020, when they rigged the election in 2020. So I'm very optimistic about the election, and I wouldn't be running for the job if I wasn't optimistic that there's a path forward to save our country, get our country back on its feet, make America great again. And that's why I feel called to do what I'm doing, Pat.
Are you of a mind, I don't want to make you commit to something here, I probably shouldn't ask this, but are you of a mind that with the Tom Cottons and some others that we have already in the Senate, that when you and other Republicans are in the Senate and you've got the majority, are you pretty certain that we could have a pretty good Senate majority leader that could step in and help us to get an awful lot done?
I'm very optimistic. Tom Cotton, my friend and my first supporter in my race, if you recall, when I jumped into the Senate race a long time ago, a year and a half ago, Tom Cotton endorsed me right out of the gate. Was
right.
The first one to do it.
Right.
And I encouraged him to run for Senate leadership, run for leader. I think he's the next generation of leadership in the Senate. He's running for the number three job in leadership. And then Senator Barrasso from Wyoming, who's
right.
very conservative,
right.
very pro-Trump, he's running for the whip job, the number two job.
Okay.
And then it's unclear who's going to take that Senate majority spot, but I guarantee you it'll be someone this time who will be aligned with President Trump, who will back him up.
Right.
And that's why I'm really looking forward to serving in a Senate majority with a new Trump administration. And recall 2016 when I won and Donald Trump won and we went to Washington. Yet Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, they weren't exactly prepared for Donald Trump to become president.
Right.
So when he did become president, they just fought with him. They fought back against Trump trying to build the wall. They fought back against Trump's foreign policy to hold China accountable and put strong tariffs on China to bring our jobs back. And he had Ryan and McConnell fighting with President Trump to do that. So both of those guys are gone now, and it's a new opportunity, a new era in the Republican Party, and a big opportunity for us to do what we have to do to save this country and move it forward.
Any Republican that's going to be in the new Congress, senator or representative, don't you think that they would take a stand against rebuilding the wall and the policies put forward by Donald Trump? They would take that position at their own peril, wouldn't they?
Without a doubt. I mean, there's a difference. I don't think the voters are different, but there's a difference in the mainstream of the Republican Party on some of these issues. And I think that's why the Republican Party is bigger, stronger. We've attracted working class blue collar voters to our party because of issues like these, securing the border, tough trade policies on China. That's brought voters like you know, Pat, you've met my dad. He's retired from Dana.
Right.
He wasn't always a Republican. He votes Republican now because it's the party of Trump. But when it was the party of Bush Cheney, he didn't always vote Republican. So we've attracted those voters to our party because of these pro-working class values that the Republican Party stands for that Donald Trump has brought to our party, and that's why I think we're going to win big in November.
We're talking to 3rd District Congressman and candidate for the Senate from the state of Indiana, Jim Banks. Congressman Banks, I want to talk to you about Ukraine, and I also want to talk to you about a recent IUPD event that you were part of down on their campus, and I need to take a quick break. You can be with me for a minute, yes?
You got it.
This is the Pat Miller Program on WoWo, 92.3 FM at 1190 AM, and on the WoWo app.
And welcome back. Glad you guys are with us. And Congressman Banks, thank you very much again, sir, for your flexibility today and for being with us for two segments, which is, you know, quite honestly, when you're out and you're running all over the state and talking to everybody, to take a full half hour to sit and talk to one radio station is pretty much a pretty large commitment, but I appreciate you making room and time for us. Let's talk about something, and I don't have a specific story in front of me, but I wanted to talk to you about Ukraine. You were one of them, and part of it's because I think because of your military background and because of your very strong background politically, that you wanted to make sure that we did Ukraine right, but that we did it well. I have questions for you, Congressman Banks. Are we doing Ukraine right? Are we doing it well? I understand from their perspective, they'd like to keep coming back with their hand out. Are we to the point that to continue to dump billions of dollars into that coffer, there needs to be maybe a little bit more accountability before we do that?
Well, that's where I stand on it. There's been no accountability for the $150 billion that we've already sent to Ukraine. We know much of that money has ended up in corrupt places and not spent on what it was meant to be spent for. There's no inspector general on any of the spending. And every time we turn around, even after we send them a large amount of money, they're asking for more. And at times, you got Zelensky completely disrespecting the United States of America and the American taxpayers that are funding his bills. So, I voted against the $40 billion a couple of years ago. I was the only member from Indiana in the House who voted against it. I voted against several more Ukraine funding initiatives. And Pat, you know, frankly, it's not because I'm anti-Ukraine. It's because I'm pro-America. And I don't understand how we can be a blank check to Ukraine when we have a wide open border at our southern border. We have inflation skyrocketing and American families are taking the hit for it. So that's where I stand on it. I mean, you got the White House working with Schumer and Speaker Johnson trying to put something on the floor here in the near term. And you think about it already, how much we've spent. If they give another $60 billion, which I think is what the White House is asking for, another $60 billion to Ukraine, then that would be almost $200 billion total in less than 2 years. That's if you do the math on that, that's $1,300 for every American taxpayer that you've spent on funding what's going on in Ukraine that the President of the United States can't even explain to us what is America's intent and role, what's our strategy, what.
Well, he doesn't know.
Draw this down and end it.
Yeah, he doesn't know.
Articulate it because he doesn't know. That's right. So I'm fed up with it. Frankly, I'm angry about it because there are too many Republicans that are going along with it and disregarding our own situation at our southern border. If there was truly everything in Congress is a negotiation, there are trade-offs for everything. So if it was a true trade-off to secure the border and go back to Trump border policies, in exchange for money for Ukraine and Israel, we should be supporting aid to Israel in this equation too, then maybe I could come to a place where I could vote for it if it includes securing the border. But until that, I'm going to firmly hold out and vote against more funding for Ukraine.
Well, and I think whatever policy we land on here on how it is we do money for Ukraine going forward, first of all, I think there needs to be some serious accountability for what it is that has happened with the money already sent, because that's not chump change. That's some serious, serious money. In a country where we are bleeding dollars and we're not even protecting our own border, I mean, it's just amazing to me. But I want to be a country where if it's Israel or if it's England or France or if it's a South American country or if it's Taiwan, if it's a friend of us that genuinely needs help, I don't want us to so hamstring ourselves and to do it so haphazardly that when it comes time to help somebody else, because of how we've handled Ukraine, people in Congress and people on the streets will say, okay, wait a minute, wait. We just can't keep doing this. And we're not going to be able to help some people I think we'd really like to help.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I've said all along that America can't lead abroad when we're so weak at home. So we got to get America back on its feet, get our economy healthy, address the deficit and debt, and when America is strong, then we can be that shining city on a hill that Reagan described, and be that America that is doing its part to keep peace and prosperity around the world, too. But we can't do that on Joe Biden's watch. I mean, he's done so much damage to the United States of America that we can't be a blank check around the world.
No.
I would much rather be supporting Israel, our most cherished ally, than Ukraine, where there's at this point we've done so much and there's no strategy to unwind it. So
right.
That's where I stand on it. I truly hope Speaker Johnson, who's coming to Fort Wayne in a couple of weeks, I hope he gets some Hoosier common sense when he comes here. I truly hope he doesn't put a Ukraine funding bill on the floor. I think it would be a travesty if he did.
Yeah, well, if he does, you better not try it before he comes here to town for the banquet. We're talking to 3rd District Congressman Jim Banks. And Congressman Banks, about 2 minutes left. I want to change channels again because you were recently at a campus event featuring yourself and Chaya Rachik, who is the founder of Libs of TikTok, and the IU Police Department had to come in and remove some people from that campus event. What happened?
Well, I'm a big fan of, I think, Chaya, I think she pronounces it Haya. It's a Hebrew name. She's a young Jewish woman. She started this, anonymously started Libs of TikTok, and she was exposed by the radical left. They truly hate her. I think they hate her more than the radical left hates almost anyone in the country. And all she does is post videos of them of the left, their own videos, their own words, that exposes how outrageous, how extreme they are, how out of touch they are with normal Americans. All she does is post their own videos and their mm-hmm. own words, and they hate her for it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely hate her.
When she came to Indiana to campaign with me, I've gotten to know her over the last couple of years and was really glad to have her come. I didn't fully realize the extent to how much they hated her. And Antifa put out a call on our meeting in Bloomington at Indiana University, my alma mater. I know it's a left-wing campus, but I didn't expect Antifa to have a cell in that part of Indiana. They put out a call and they came to harass us, and they had masks on. They were shouting and disrupting our meeting.
Yeah, how many kids did you kill today? I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah. Lots of other things they said too. They all had masks on, and yeah, they frankly their bark was worse than their bite. But in the IU Police Department had to come in and remove a few of them, and we didn't have to, but we welcomed them into the room with the College Republicans and told them they could ask questions and we could have a civil conversation. Most of them didn't want that, but a few of them stuck around, and we had an interesting time with them. But
yeah,
never a dull day on the campaign trail.
You know, depending on whatever side somebody is on an issue, if you can sit down and openly have a reasoned debate, everybody can learn and everybody can grow. On this Saturday, I appreciate very much your being with us today, sir, and thank you for hanging around for two complete segments. Best of luck to you as you continue on the campaign trail and as things continue there. I look forward to seeing you when Speaker Johnson comes here to town in a couple of weeks, and I'll be there and see you then. Congressman Banks, thank you so much.
Have a good day.
Thank you so much. And we'll see all of you straight ahead right after the bottom of the hour, right here on WOWO 92.3 FM and 1190 AM.
Hey, welcome back as we're starting our last half hour of the Pat Miller program here on this Saturday. I hope you're having a terrific weekend. Hope whatever plans you and your family have for the balance, I hope it's a great one. Remember, if there's parts of the program you want to go back and listen to, you can do that. And it's really easy. Just go to wowo.com, click on Programs, find Pat Miller Program, and when you click on that, you will see all of our podcasts come up. There are three podcasts per show, hours 1, 2, and 3. Brilliant, huh? So they had to make it easy. I have to figure out what's going on. But you can listen to any or all of the segments from any program or all of the programs. They're all right there. And you can get to that, share it with your friends, people. If there's something that you said, you know, there's something that Pat said, I don't think it was last week, I think it was the week before. You can go in there and just find it and just click on it and listen to it. If you'd like to rehear some of the interviews, those are in there as well. There's a two-word phrase that's often said, fully funded. Now, that means a lot of things to a lot of people. It depends on what segment of society you're talking about. Fully funded. Well, teachers' unions and politicians frequently say that public schools need to be fully funded. Some politicians even run on the campaign promise of working hard to fully fund schools. Well, the truth is, nobody really knows exactly what that means. And there's no price tag that's ever given as to how much it will take to fully fund schools. If you go back just a couple of years ago, in 2020 and 2021, the federal government provided about $190.5 billion toward the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Fund, the ESSER Fund. In fact, through the balance of this program, this show, I'm just going to call it ESSER, but just know that's Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Fund. I just get tired of saying it. But the federal government provided $190.5 billion toward the ESSER to allegedly make schools better and safer during the pandemic. Well, even if you bought into that and that made sense, did we do it? Is that what they did with the money? I mean, if it's to make us safe during the pandemic, you have to wonder, how were they actually spent nationwide? And how were they spent in the state of Indiana? How was that done? A lot of schools use their ESSER funds to hire more administrators and learning specialists, as well as create or expand tutoring and social or emotional learning programs. Why does that matter? ESSER funds are not recurring funds from the federal government. They have an expiration date. They don't keep coming back and coming back and coming back. This means that school districts nationwide spent the funds on recurring initiations and salaries, knowing they have an expiration date. Well, that's going to result in school districts needing to either cut or fit their new recurring expenses into an already inflated budget. All this comes up because whether it's money given out during the pandemic or when it went out, we don't have good safeguards in this country in a lot of areas, and one of them is in education. We don't know exactly where the money went and how it worked. What budgets do for school districts, what do they do with the money they've already got? Let me give you a couple of examples here. The Baltimore School District, budgeted for 2025, has already been approved for $2.58 billion. This is the same district where zero students at 13 high schools in Baltimore tested proficient on state math exams. Zero. In other words, when they tested all their students, none of them passed the proficient state math exams. In 2023, just last year, Nashville's school district had a budget of $1.2 billion. In that same year, only 34% of students tested proficient in math and 36% tested proficient in English language arts assessments. Well, aside from a school district's regular budget, many districts also have foundations where they can take monetary donations and get more funding for their schools. School districts also often apply for grants, which give them even more money to fund their schools. As ESSER funds for school districts expire, teachers' unions and politicians are about to start their cry again. They're going to start wallowing and bellyaching that we need to fully fund schools. Now, before I would argue for or against, and I would argue that schools are fully funded and have been for quite some time, but if we're going to argue whether or not we need to do, for example, in Northeast Indiana, whatever school district you're in, we need to step out and we need to make sure that in our school districts here,
that we are fully funded in our school districts. What does that mean? What does that mean? What is fully funded? And in all of that, how are you going to monitor it? I think we're idiots if we just hand a bag of cash to our schools and say, there you go. And then we're shocked in 3 years when we find out we're not passing proficiency tests. ESSER funds are going to stop. So they're going to start screaming and crying for fully funded. I've talked about this before. When you send a dollar of taxpayer money to Washington, D.C., and it gets absorbed in the National Department of Education, and then it is then returned to our states so that they can give it out to our public school systems here locally, but it's not everything that we sent in. It's not that full dollar that comes back. It's something just under 80 cents. Where did the other 20% go? It's to run the national board that's there in D.C. And know this, nobody screams, hollers, and cries more for their money than the people at the top of the tote board, because they want to make sure that they're getting paid whether what they do is sufficient or not. You know, when we sit here and we say people in Allen County need to be held accountable to make sure that we're getting all the results that we need with our students here in Allen County. Okay, does that go all the way up to the national level? Can we hold those people accountable too? I mean, we're sending them money. If we're sending them money, how about this? Why don't we do what we said we would do? Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. You read what it says that is allotted to the federal government. And if you don't find it there, you don't let them run it. You pull it back. You pull it back and you let it be run here, locally. Now, to do that is going to take the hand of God practically on the throat of Congress to get that done. But they sit there and they squander and they squalor. And listen, these people that run these teachers unions, they know how to make the D.C. politicians squeal and jump up and down. In fact, you'll hear all kinds of things if we ever try to stop the national education system. What are you trying to do to our kids? I'm trying to get them a better education at a lower cost. We have some pretty brilliant people here in Indiana, and nobody cares more about Indiana kids than Hoosiers at the Indiana State House. And if we don't like what they're doing with it, we can replace them a whole lot faster than we can the boneheads that are in Washington, D.C. We need to get a handle on it. We need to start yanking it back in, because if we don't, this is going to go on. You let these ESSER funds expire, unbelievable what's going to happen. School districts are going to spend millions on contracts with social and emotional learning providers while students continue to graduate with these low proficiency numbers in reading and math. Central offices are bloated with unnecessary administrative positions that do not produce positive results. We need to get a handle on it, folks. I don't want to go the route of Memphis or Nashville or Baltimore or even Indianapolis for that matter. We'd better get on top of this.
This is the Pat Miller Program on WoWo 92.3 FM and 1190 AM and at WoWo.com.
Closing time. Open all the doors and let you out into the world.
Closing. And we're back. This is the Pat Miller Program here in our final hour, our final segment. And again, thanks so very much for being with us. If you send me a text or if you send me an email, if you ask for some kind of response, it's a little hard to do it right on the air. I'll do it as quickly as I can. If not, just as soon as the show's over, then hopefully by the time you and I all go to bed tonight. But we, a couple other things I wanted to cover here. We had last, and this, I'm just going to be honest with you. This absolutely grinded my gears. It absolutely grinded my gears that last Sunday, which in my house, I'm thinking probably yours also, that on Easter Sunday, our president, who can't get a clear handle on anything, made it clear enough that that had to be the transgender day of visibility. Now, is it clear now that the purpose of the Transgender Day of Visibility was not to provide aid and comfort to individuals, and particularly children, who are suffering from gender dysphoria. Its purpose is to increase the number of children who experience gender dysphoria by literally encouraging it. I mean, what if a president issued a statement on World Schizophrenia Awareness Day? And I'm not limiting things on schizophrenia either. That also is a problem with a lot of people in our society. If a president issued a statement on World Schizophrenia Awareness Day, it would not begin by honoring the extraordinary courage of schizophrenics, nor would it declare that they help America thrive. That would make no sense. That would make zero sense. Why? Well, Pat, that's stupid. Because the people that suffer from all of this, they're suffering from it not out of willful obedience or disobedience. They suffer from it because of a disease. Let me change channels a little bit. Anybody who really believes that men can become women and that affirming biological reality is tantamount to genocide is evidently going to throw you in prison. That's why they use terms like genocide. It's not to accurately describe what you're doing. It's to justify destroying your life by force through any means necessary. That's where they are on all this. That's where they are. Listen, the people that sit there and say, you know, well, you've got to live with the science. Can I ask one question? And I used to hear this. I'm not hearing this hardly at all anymore. But let's ask this to each other. If, in fact, it is scientific that those who want biological changes done to them in order to help them make a transfer over into the other sex, the other gender, however they want to put it now. We had a mess going on this week where a young man claiming to be a woman was on a swim team. Young man to the point that he even was still sprouting his beard on his face. And it was bad enough that young ladies on his own team had to change in front of him in their locker room. But halfway through it, he made the exclamation, "Woo! Look at those," and think of a T word for part of a woman's anatomy. Were that your daughter, and she had just taken off the top of her swimsuit outfit, and that comment came from somebody in the room who not only had a male voice, but also had facial hair, Is that a team that you want your daughter on? We've had teams now in one city pull their basketball team off the floor, even though their team was winning, because three of the young ladies from one team, even though their team was ahead at the time, because of the gruffness and the abruptness by which the transgender individual on the other team wrestled the ball away from people and threw them to the floor, injuring one lady so badly she had to be stretchered off the floor because of the sciatic damage that had been done to her. And so the coach said, "I'm done. We're out of this." So you're going to punish that team, who was a girls' team of all girls, but they were going down fast at the hands of a male on the other team. Well, we called him for a technical. Well, Lottie freaking da. You've got a guy out there beating up on girls and doing it with the approval of school systems and people in politics because it's the right thing to do. It's not the right thing to do. It is. Listen, I'm just telling you, I'm glad my girls are 40 and 44 now, because if we were still back in high school, whether it would be in color guard or band or basketball, I'm just here to tell you that if anything like that or even close to that happened with one of my girls, yeah, in the game if you want, but the first time Shannon or Courtney would have hit a floor, I'd have been down there on that floor so fast they wouldn't know what happened. They would have never seen a short, fat, ugly guy move so fast. Listen, these are not just political pockets of people and thought here. These are real people doing real things that are starting to cause real damage to other real people who have done nothing. In and of themselves, they've done nothing wrong. But we can't seem to get to that in our head. I don't know why that is. I genuinely don't. We've got all of this going on. And all of this, well, we just need to make sure that, you know, that in this whole thing of public schools and then making sure that they're funded properly and that we can do all this so that nobody can suffer. Well, people are suffering. And that's the part that we need to understand. People are suffering. In schools, by the way, before I lose my thought on the other, in schools that are already fully funded, but we're going to be screamed at again going forward that they're not fully funded enough. Next week on the Pat Miller program, we will have our visit again, at least I think, with Jim Banks and with Philip Wegman. Jim Banks, because I think it's good to hear what our leading Senate candidate in Indiana has to say about things going on, because I need to have at least one senator in Washington, D.C. that carries the same thought of conservatism that my heart carries. And our senator from the southern part of the state, I'm pretty sure that's not what I'm getting. But I want to know what he's thinking there as a congressman now and then as senator later. Once we get past the debates and once we get past the primary elections here in Indiana, we will have everything all figured out as who is going to be the Republican candidate for governor and lieutenant governor and the candidate for Senate, which I believe will be Jim Banks, and then also for 3rd District. And I've got a favorite in that race. I'm not letting that out just yet because we have as many people there running for that office as Heinz has varieties. But once this all starts feathering out, you and I need to be talking to these people more and more every week on the Pat Miller program to where I'm actually going to have you suggesting questions to me that I can share with them to make sure that we get the right answers. Listen, school systems and taxation and foreign affairs and our southern border, it's all going to be slipping away from us like crazy. You know, schools, they need to be better at being fully funded. And some of them, they're fully funded means they've also got the money to get little Jimmy to a doctor so he can start his sex change procedures, whether mom and dad are aware or not. That is a lousy way of doing business. Hey, we'll be here next week, always every Saturday from 12 to 3. Make sure you catch the podcast. Just go to wowo.com, find the Pat Miller program, and then you'll see all of our podcasts, 3 hours for each week, and you can read them and listen to them right there in order. Thanks for being with us here on WoWo 92.3 FM, 1190 AM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.